Hello and welcome to the Unbox Innovation Podcast brought to you by BoxLight. I'm your host, Michelle Dawn Mooney, and today we're talking about enhanced learning environments and opportunity in new school building projects. In 2024, the national school construction budget will surpass $72 billion. About $5 billion will be dedicated to communications and audiovisual technologies. That's on top of about $3.5 billion budgeted for educational technology updates by school districts. So what do these newly applied technologies do for teachers and learners? And maybe more importantly, how will they impact the design of the 21st century learning environments? I have a great guest to have this conversation with today. Jamie Mendez is Vice President of Infrastructure Projects for BoxLight. Jamie, thank you for being with me today.
So happy to be here with you, Michelle.
Looking forward to this conversation. Before we kind of jump in, Jamie, can I ask you to give us a brief bio if you can?
Yes, of course. Well, I'm going to start with the earliest of everything. I was born in a little town in southern Spain called Malaga. I wish we'll explain a little bit to your audience my accent, which is now part of what I am. I have been working in this field of technologies for education for about 26 years now. I have been working with infrastructure projects for the past 17 years. I have been prepared for doing this throughout many encounters with my competitors outside there that have hired me for years, and then I've been bouncing basically into three companies in the past 17 years. By education, my first education was engineer and an MBA. And also I am a very good dog owner and very lovely cat owner. I have a wife and a child.
Well, you know, I had to say before we started the recording, I had to ask about that picture back there. And you told me about your wife and your son. And I wish we had more time that people can hear about all the great things that he's doing. But unfortunately, we have to switch gears here and talk about the topic at hand today. But great to have you here, Jamie, and looking forward to getting to this conversation. And clearly, you are well qualified to talk about this because we're talking about, you know, enhanced learning environments. It really provides an opportunity for new school building projects. So let's start here. How are the latest advancements in educational technology shaping the landscape of new school construction projects?
Well, it's the impact of technology in the construction of schools is very important, is very profound, and is one of the aspects that touches the community the most. Believe it or not, the new school is a great news for a community, because it becomes the center of that community. The kids, say, if it's an elementary school, are going to go there. That's going to be their first experience with the school. Parents are going to be there. They're going to talk to other parents. There's going to be a PTA organization. There's going to be all these kinds of activities that go on in school. So a new school is the very heart of what the community can call its own heart, and is exactly right there in the center of their geographical area. For another vision, I hope and I have wished that all our kids will go through a great experience in school. My kid, for instance, went to, he just graduated elementary school, and his next school year, he's going to be a junior in the junior high. And the school that he went to was built in 1951, just a few years after World War II. Some of the teachers that we have today at the school went to elementary school in that school. So it's a great thing. I think it's an heirloom to the community to have that school there. And it has been changing throughout the years. But nothing can change the fact that it's an old building that has been made out of walls that cannot be changed, and that were meant to teach kids in certain ways and fashions. That is not the way today kids learn. So Does the building affect their learning and their educational experience? I'll say yes, definitely. There is a great intersection between the learning experience and the building where that happened. What is the learning environment looking like? So there are things that can change that and can help that, like furniture, new furniture that is made to deliver the curriculum in a different way. That helps a lot. Some technologies to help out with the noise or with enhancing the voice of the teacher, that helps a lot. Interactive displays, that helps a lot. There are things that kids miss, though. They don't have a community place. The schools today are built with a cluster of little nooks where kids can go, sit down, and interact. They can talk, they learn, they study, they can have all these good activities, and they are created for that. In the old time, schools didn't have that. Basically, students would go to the classroom and learning would happen in that classroom, and then they would go home. That's how this old school that we have here that my kid just went through on 6 years, that's what that school does. And when the district was trying to close it down a year ago, member of the PTA, we were upset at that because the kids would be sent to nearby schools that had already a large number of students. They were overcrowding, already overcrowded schools. So we said, well, the best scenario is that this old school probably is a better solution than an overcrowded school. So that's where we stood for, and that's how we're going to stand today. Now, the educational technology shapes the schools because it provides ways to learn that otherwise wouldn't exist. Because of this age where information is important, and the interconnection and interactivity between students and teachers exist, we have to have these places that connect to us in an emotional way, in a physical way, and then they convert themselves to be a flexible learning space. And those things cannot happen without technology. And the building has to be built with that technology already in the specifications of the building. So yeah, the influence of technology in the design of new schools in this age is incredibly important. I hope that every community would have a new school, and they would see how these kids do so well in these new schools. But that's not going to happen. And what all we can do is promote these new schools, promote whatever there is a bond to finance new schools, promote it and help it, because that will help the kids definitely.
We have a lot of territory to cover here. Not a lot of time to do it, but that really just kind of was a springboard to get us into this conversation. But a few things that I want to touch on. You talked about your son's school being built post-war era, and there are just so many changes from a manufacturing standpoint, from aesthetics, so many things to cover here with older buildings versus the more modern buildings. But I want to hit on something specifically. What role do advanced technologies play in bolstering school safety measures during emergencies? Because more and more, I mean, clearly safety has always been a concern, but times have changed, and that really is at the top of the list in making sure that our kids are safe. So how does that play in this scenario?
Well, a very, very important role, but not in fully in exactly the way that most people look at it. It is sad that we've seen these situations going on in schools, and I don't want to just bring memories that are very sad and violent, but I have to say those are statistically improbable in your school. If you look at it from the statistics point of view, it's plausible, but very unlikely that that would happen in your particular community. Even though if you know they had these tragedies that we have heard of are very hard to think of or even see, there's things that are far more important today. And before in your question before I talked a bit about community and the sense of community. So it happens that I am part of an organization that promotes the learning environment amongst architects and engineers that design schools. And this organization, I am a member of a task group for school safety. And because of that, I have a lot of a background into that side of safety. So it happens that the main problem and challenge in school safety is bullying. That is the most widespread problem today. And that's why schools are designed with a sense of community in mind. Because by building that community, kids can speak out more loudly. They can speak out to everybody, and everybody's there in that community. So as you build a more close knit community within your school, you are building everything that they would need to fight off bullying. The bullies will be called out much more easily and without much of a problem either. So that's the first answer to your question is, if you build a building with a deep sense of community and you allow the community to come in and it becomes a community place, we are getting rid of that first problem, which is the bullying of kids against kids. There is bullying of teachers against kids too, and that can be called out too. Now, let's go one layer deeper into safety and security. Most likely, the job of the district superintendent and everybody who works under them, the first job they have is to keep these kids safe. You would think that their first responsibility would be to their learning, but nobody can learn in an unsafe place. So safety is beyond any other priority. Now, every school building has to have a school safety plan. That safety plan has to be reviewed by the district, reviewed by other security experts, and make sure that it is trained with that. That is a living document that keeps changing as society and the community changes. Now, so the first step for safe school, I would say then our second is to create a safety plan for that particular building. It's not good that the school district has a safety plan for all the schools. That's not good because every school building is different. So you have to have very specific plans to that school building. And then obviously the first stages of the safety mechanisms are mitigating and probably trying to these emergencies to be avoided. So that is a very important part. How do you mitigate that? How do you report what you saw, what you heard from a kid saying something, or what you saw probably in the backpack? How do you report those things? Is there an easy way for anybody to go back and be part of that mitigation and prevention? The answer is yes. But you have to have a plan. How do kids do that? Do they know how to do that? Do you teach them? Do you try it out over and over and see what happens? And then there is what you do when an emergency happens. That's called the response. If the emergency happens, okay, we just cannot deny it. It is here. And it is whatever it is, from fire to lockdown or shelter in place or something like that. So how do you train for that, and how do you get to know that that is the case, that that's the situation you're at? So that is a place where all these technologies that are educational otherwise become informational in alerting the building occupants that there is this emergency and that they have to do this set of actions. And that's the most important part. So the company I work for, we believe that, you know, very profoundly, and I'm not trying to make here an infomercial of these podcasts, but I just have to say that schools don't have the budget to buy a safety equipment parallel to educational instructional equipment. They have to make do with whatever they can, and very likely they cannot afford both. So you have to make what they have, which is instructional equipment, work in case of an emergency to respond to that emergency. And there is many ways that you can do that. So by creating that convergence of systems, making everything come into one system, you make a safety plan more likely to succeed because the response is already built in with what they have. They don't have to go out and buy more. So that's another part that is extremely important in talking about safety today in education, because everything comes down to budget. Who pays for what?
So let's talk about that a little more deeply, because as you said, one of the first lines of defense is to make a more conducive environment for kids, administrators, teachers to be open, right? To have that sense of community. But how do we do that? In what ways does school building design contribute to fostering everything that you are saying that we need? And then how do we go about doing that when you have so many restrictions?
Yeah. So a school building is a community friendly by design. It's not by accident. It's by design. How do you build the different elements in that school to allow the community to come in? For instance, there is middle schools and high schools that are in places where the kids are either getting a free lunch, and many times that is not enough, and they need to get a breakfast. And in summer vacation, they need to get something to get home. So do you build those a building that can offer and support those services to start with? Do you build a pantry in a high school where kids can come, pick up food, and pick up clothes and other needs that they may have? Do they have that building? Well, those buildings happen by design. You can make them happen. How do you access to them? How do you exit them? That's by design, because you know there's a lot of sociological implications into that. How do you build a community center within the school that can serve as an auditorium for the students? When in case of need, you can bring all parents and all assembly together. It would be for a recreation, or it could be for the PTA meeting, or for any other community initiated group that wants to have a place to meet and a place to carry over their function. So that's how you design schools. You have to design them in different ways. And let me give you another example of this. Community is built between humans by interaction, by being together. Old schools used to have hallways that were, you know, not too wide, but it's just a straight hallways. You probably remember your high school, your middle school. It was just a straight hallway with nothing in between. It's only classrooms and, you know, doors. That doesn't exist anymore. Now we have a very wide hallway, but it's not even straight. It's built with little chairs here, little place here where you can sit, another place there. That's where kids meet. You have to build that. It's like building a coral reef. You have to give the space for the little critters to come and build the coral themselves. That's exactly what it is. That's how you bring and create a sense of community in school design.
I want to switch gears and talk about, you know, of course, we've covered safety, and that is of the utmost importance, regardless of what emergency we're dealing with, right? But let's get down to actual learning. And you made a great point saying that if the kids are not safe or there's not a safe place that they can learn, then that's going to be inhibited. But when it comes down to the actual act of why schools were designed to have our students get the best education that they can, right? Let's talk about how incorporating educational technologies in new school construction really aligns with the evolving needs of 21st century learners. How are some of the things that you're talking about with, you know, changing things up, even if it's not a full rebuild, just how important are they when it comes to kids getting the best education that they can?
It's a very good question, and I thank you for that. As a matter of fact, as you know, the construction process is divided in divisions, and there is a Construction Specifications Institute that has created these different sections of the construction of the building. Instructional technology belongs to division number 27, and that division number 27 is also called communications. So you can tell that from the get-go, communications and educational technology go together. And they go together for a reason that I am explaining to you right now. Nowadays, our modern communications rely mostly on data communications, where the devices and the network have an IP address and they talk amongst themselves. And these are intelligent devices that can answer when they're called, they can give their status on a poll, etc. So it's a very sophisticated system of communications, and all of that is really built on network communications. So when you have instructional technological device, one of the main characteristics for that device to help out in safety is that that device is not a standalone, but that device is connected to the network. If that device is not connected to the network and that is a dead end, I would say you administrators should be using that funding better, because you need to have devices talking to devices to make a communication happen. And it could be a normal day communication, a PA page that calls to a group that tells them some information. That's a daily event in a school. But that same PA system can go everywhere and can talk to individuals, can talk to groups in classrooms, and can talk to devices like displays and say, display, you're off, turn on, and then deliver this content I'm giving you. At the same time, another intelligent device is calling on a recorded, pre-recorded call, calling the first responders, alerting that there is this type of emergency, not just an emergency, but this type of emergency going on at this school. And then at the same time, the text is going everywhere to all the registered cell phones that are in the school, or the parents, or both, saying there is this emergency going on right now. So there is a lot of different alerts that go to different levels of people that have and can have to and can take action to respond to that particular emergency. Now, that's going one way, which is there's a centralized system, say the office, and the office is sending an information based on intelligence inside from the school that there is something happening. Now, but how do you collect that intelligence? How could the teacher report, I cannot talk, but there is something here going on, and we've been preparing for this, and today is going to happen. Today is the day. So for instance, if you have a microphone, whatever the teacher has on it, If it is a microphone, just put a button on that microphone that you can call it a panic button. If you don't have a microphone, then just put something on you that you can press, that you can send a call that, you know, there is a panic, there is a situation in your classroom. There is a protocol for that, and that must exist, but that's a use of an instructional technology applied to an emergency situation. Now, when all these systems are working both ways, inside and outside, then you have a better coverage of the emergency and the responding effect that we're trying to give to it. Now, if the school at one point or another is unsafe and people have to evacuate, like in the case of fire, it's a different emergency that if the school has to lock down and not go out of the classroom. So how do you differentiate? How do you get that information that has to be different and that you have to understand it? And it should be clear enough that you just see it and you know what it is. So all of that comes down to technology. They're giving you visual cues, audio cues, all your panels, I mean, TVs or displays can turn on and give you the specific information of what you should do. Like, for instance, did you know that when there is a fire and you are in a classroom, the teacher needs to count each one of the students that he or she has in the classroom right away and memorize that number, because when they go out and they meet at the place that they've been told to go, he has to count them again. And if there is one missing, you better be looking for that one that is missing, and you have to report for that. So, you know, there's a lot of things that don't come to mind naturally that you would not remember to do just because you can remember. But if you read it there and you see it and you can read it and you hear it, then you understand it. So that's how technology gets into a very sophisticated level that is conducive to security and safety,
which ultimately affects learning on all levels. I mean, anything that's done in the school is going to be done at a better level when that security and safety is in check. So I kind of want to wrap up here with, it's a little bit of a delicate area here. In a perfect world, we would have budgets for new buildings everywhere, right? New schools for everyone. But as we know, Jamie, that does not exist, right? So let's kind of get down to the bare bones of why we're having this conversation, because there are ways around this, as you said. I mean, obviously some money is involved, but let's talk about, more importantly, what are the long-term implications of investing in educational technology within school construction projects? Because clearly this is not a freebie where we can just float along and get something super improved and tackle some of these challenges without making some type of investment. So how does that work together?
Well, Michelle, that's another very good question, because it's very practical. And if we understand the answer to your question, then we know exactly what we should be doing at this point. So for starters, technology costs money and cannot be made for free. And new schools are expensive, and they have to be budgeted and financed. So the first rule of thumb is, if you have a new school that has been designed with everything that you will need as any modern school is, you better get every piece of technology that you think that you need, or that your teachers have found that they need, or that the district finds out that it's the best use of the money. Get it at that time, because that is the moment where the capital project pays for that technology. That capital project is paid in 5 or 10 years out of a bond that the citizens have approved, and that bond is paid out of property taxes that we agreed to pay, maybe a little bit more, but there is a new school construction. So the first thing is, get it when the building is new. get every single piece of technology that might be required just that moment. The second rule of this is, once you get this equipment, search for, you know, reputable manufacturers. Search for extended warranties. Yeah, don't accept a 2 or 3 year warranty. That's not enough. You have to look into the 5 or 10 year warranties. How do you do that? How could you get this equipment going for as long as it can? Oh, eventually it has to be replaced, but let's try to extend that period of replacement for a long time through these warranties and these reputable manufacturers that can do that. Now, when it comes down also to school building, everything comes down to bonding and the financing. Sometimes I think some communities are open. Most of the time they're open to pass the bonds. And a few times they are not passed. It is because there is a gap of misunderstanding amongst the public of what is it that you're going to be doing with all this money that you're requesting. Today's bonds go, I've seen a $2 billion bond in a large school district. That's a lot of money. So you better explain clearly to your citizens, what are they getting back out of that money? What is the gain for the community? When that is explained clearly, I don't see much of a negative inclination to not vote for the bond. And I think that is up to school districts to inform and to make sure that we all understand the reason for this bond to be asked. And then we do our job as citizens to look at it, look at the opportunity. It's not just because I don't have little kids anymore. It's not, I'm not going to vote for an elementary school. I know that elementary school is going to bring better things to our community. It's going to probably elevate my home price. It's going to do a lot of good things to me. So we have to look into the community standpoint, the bigger community standpoint, not just our little wins, because we will have all those little wins, but we sometimes have to be to look into the greater good for the community.
Any final thoughts as we're wrapping up here?
Well, thank you for the time. I think that a new school, as I said when we began this podcast, is a great opportunity, and we all see the happiness in our kids. Teachers are far more satisfied in new schools than old school. That's all been tested and known. And I think that the most important things that we can do, even if we don't have new school, is to create this sense of communities. If that's the first step that we can do, that's probably the best we can do. Be a member of your local PTA. Be active in the learning process of your kid. We are in this day in modern education, they're asking the kids to become a partner in the learning process, an active partner in the learning process. They're not sitting down there to get information. They're now sitting there and they are working with their peers and doing their part in the learning process. So there is a lot of things that we can do. And even when we don't have a new school project, there are a lot of things that we can do to strengthen our communities. And by strengthening our communities, strengthening the safety of our children and the security of the buildings that they go to.
It really is a big emphasis on learning. And that's why we're doing this podcast today. I have to ask you before we let you go, any resources that you'd like to offer if people are listening to this conversation and they have maybe some more questions or they want to learn more about what we're talking about here today, where can they go?
So I referred earlier to this association of architects and engineers and school administrators that is a think tank, and it's called the Association for Learning Environments, and it stands for A4LE. And this association has a website that is full of resources. If you're looking to safety, if you're looking to what to do when there's a new school coming up, how can you help, etc. So go to a4le.org, and there is a ton of resources out there. And all of us are, I mean, we're not fake. We are all volunteers in the association, and help each other, help regular people like all of us to be part of this task of making the learning environment a better environment, a safer environment for our kids.
Jamie Mendez, Vice President of Infrastructure Projects for Boxlight. Jamie, thank you for your time. Great conversation, really insightful. And it's exciting to see where things are taking us. And we have so many resources at our fingertips now that can help with this process, because it isn't just one group. As you said, we may not have a middle school student or even a high school student or a pre-K student or what have you, but we're all affected by the community. And you know, you talked about your son. We talked a little bit off camera about what he's doing going into junior high now, and maybe it's for his son or daughter, the new schools that are around the corner. So thank you for being here. Great conversation. I'm sure a lot of people learned from it and maybe would like to learn a little bit more, and thankfully can because of the resources that you gave them. So appreciate your time today.
Absolutely, Michelle. Thank you. Nice to be with you today.
And of course, I want to thank all of you for listening and tuning in to the Unbox Innovation Podcast brought to you by Boxlight. And you can always visit boxlight.com for more information on the company as well. We would invite you to subscribe to this podcast if you want to hear more engaging conversations like the one you heard today. I'm your host, Michelle Dawn Mooney. Thanks again for joining us. We hope to connect with you on another podcast soon.